everyone. It's Angela Stevens with the podcast Refocus Careers. And you're going to love this guest. He is just so awesome in so many ways that he's somebody that had a career that I don't think you would ever imagine what he does because it's so dynamic. But today, our guest is Peter Freer. He is the CEO and founder of Play Attention. And we'll talk more about that, but he's also the founder and the CEO for Freer Logic. So we're going to learn more about him. But Peter, welcome to our show and thank you so much for doing this.
I am happy to be here. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So, okay, I'm going to take you way back to early on in your career. So when you were a young adult, not that you're old now, but when you were starting out, what did you want to be when you started out in your career?
You know, I started martial arts at the age of 10. I'm now an 8th degree black belt. And I started instructing at age 16. And then I even was an amateur and professional fighter. And so I knew I could be a good teacher. So as I went through school, my mom was a classroom teacher. So I got my master's in education and I began teaching adults and students. And I found out a lot of them had ADHD. And my specialty was in math, physics, science, and computer programming. So I thought, I'll fix them. I'll build something that they can use. And that's what led me into leaving education and starting Play Attention. I actually did research on what was being done to get people to pay more attention. And I found that NASA was using neurotech to engage astronauts to be more focused in states of hyperarousal, where things were incredibly going wrong or exciting, overly exciting, and hypoarousal, where they're looking at gauges and it was boring. And they were using neurotech. So I enhanced what they did. I added in cognitive skills training and behavior shaping to it and body-based acquisition of a neurosignal. And we filed patents on that. And then they sent one of their representatives down. Dr. Paulson came to look at what Play Attention was, and he was enamored with it. So it
and
was.
And how kind of, old were you? Do you remember how old you were when you did this?
So I was probably about 32.
So you were still, and you're very young to do that too. Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Pretty young at the time. I'm a late bloomer anyway. You know, it took me a long time to
Are you ADHD yourself?
I am not.
You're not. Well, because most ADHD are late bloomer. I'm the same way. My son was the same way. So that's why I was asking. And that's probably why you were such a great teacher. But please go ahead.
Yeah. From there on, it just kind of sprouted when I initially came out with it. It seemed to be a hot topic at the time, and it still is. ADHD is an incredibly hot topic, no matter what era we're in. It's still among all of us, and many of us are realizing it happens at different points in our lives, right? As adults, there are so many more women being diagnosed now, so many more men, because they have wondered all their lives, why is it that I have worked so hard and it has been a struggle all my life. Why?
All my life. I'm your perfect example. I didn't know till I was 45 and I have three businesses. And I think it's the reason I could work three businesses, but it's been a struggle. But my parents didn't know at that time, you know, how to help. And I just got a call for a guy who was a Marine who wanted our calendars from our company, Refocus the Creative Office. And he was diagnosed with ADHD later in life. And he said, you know, your calendars helped me so much. And I've told my whole unit about this. And so just like that, a Marine who has ADHD has found out mid-career, right? And it's mostly women. So getting that feedback is crazy, isn't it?
It is representative of what is happening among the general population. You know, as we grow older, we have found that we use, you know, these telephones, our pocket phones. We have a computer with us every second of the day. And we have found a direct correlation between the use of these electronic devices and our inability to sustain and direct our attention at will. As a matter of fact, if you go out to a restaurant nowadays, you can see a whole family sitting around the tables there. They're not talking to each other.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Got a cell phone out and they're texting and doing things there. So there's no communication. Our lives have drastically changed. There is a really good book. It's Neil Postman, called Amusing Ourselves to Death. Really good. And he's a...
writing this down. Neil Postman, and what was it called?
Amusing Ourselves to Death.
I got it. Okay.
And it's really good because he said, you know, in the 1800s, the average person in her lifetime got what the equivalent of a Sunday edition of the New York Times. That was in her lifetime, right? Now we get that information on a daily basis. We're inundated with information, so much so we can't process all of it. AI is happening. Well, then we investigate AI. What is AI? Is AI dangerous? Is AI going to create robots? Is AI, you know, so we've got all that new information and it's moving faster than we can process as human beings. We're inundated. We're overwhelmed. And so the brain is having a hard time adapting to all of this. And I think that accounts for a lot of the reason we're all highly distracted and we have very short attention spans. Microsoft did a study just a few years ago, and they found that the average human being has an attention span of about 7 seconds before.
Right.
And a goldfish has an attention span of 9 seconds. So the average human being has shorter attention span, according to that study, than a goldfish. So yeah, we're not on a good trajectory. Yeah. We need to be able to take control of our life, which is one of the things that you do with Refocus, which is something I appreciate, because we have to find ways in which we can adjust our lives so that, you know, attention is everything. Attention is the glue that holds our lives together. It's the glue, because all of our who we are and what we are is formed in the brain as a series of pictures and events and feelings and smells, and, you know, because even smell can trigger memories for you. Mm-hmm. So all of this is glued together in the brain by attention. Yeah. And if we don't have enough attention, then who are we anymore?
Yeah.
And a lot of people wonder, who am I? Why? What is my purpose? You know, this is a constant question, but it's even more prevalent now because we're inundated with so much information that we have a hard time processing and paying attention. This is all so incredibly related. And that's what my main interest is. I know that's what Refocus does, is giving strategies and methods. And that is also my primary interest because it's critical. This is who we are as human beings. So we have to be able to adapt and control it.
Right. So I'm going to go back to something you said first, and I want to make a comment about the dinner table. So we always had a rule when my son was home that everyone put their phone up, because one thing I've learned about kids with ADHD, they hear no all the time and they need more yeses than nos. And take it from a mother who had a child who was a single mom for 10 years, more yeses than nos. They need that encouragement. They really do talk to them about their day. So try to do it. And you have to be an example. Put the phone away. You've got to put your phone away. No matter if you're a business person or not, you've got to focus in on your family at that time. That's my theory. But going back to you, when you said that you were teaching and then you started this business. So a lot of people in today's world, young and old, they get the job. And then they get the golden handcuffs where they're used to getting the benefits and the job, and taking that leap to start a business is a big deal, right? So what was it about you that said, okay, I'm going to do this? Because with my first business, I have a 30-year executive search firm. I started with $3,000. I would never recommend that, but I had the drive and the ability to make it happen. So who am I to say that it's not? But for you, when you made that transition, what was it and how hard was it for you to make that transition?
Wow. The motivation it's a critical question. It's a great question for you to ask. My motivation behind all of it is a boy named John. I was teaching. I live in North Carolina. At the time, I had moved down from New York. And I was living in North Carolina. I got a job in the North Carolina country school district. And the principal came to me. We were teaching in pods at that time, huge round buildings with no dividers. So an ADHD student in that environment cannot survive. So the teachers would partition each segment like a pie, putting up bookshelves and chalkboards and things like that. But John, the principal, came to me. I was the only male for fourth and fifth grades there and sixth grades, only male in that pod. And he said, since you're a male, I want you to take John. You know, he's had female teachers up to this point. None of them have been able to control him. He can't pay attention. He can't sit still. And I'm just like, I said, I don't know what I'll do differently, but yes, go ahead. I'll take him. You know, so I had John come in. I had no idea. This is mid 80s. I had no idea what to do with him. I went back to university. I said, look, this kid is all over the place. What do I do? And they said, oh, that is called, I think it just started. It was transitioning then from minimal brain dysfunction to attention deficit disorder. And so they said, that's what this is. So put him really close to your desk. Use proximity control. And I did. I said, make an individualized curriculum for him so that you have clear goals that he can get to and make them realistic for him. I did. I did a bunch of little things that made John's life easier. He was sitting right next to me. So I had the best time with him. He was a happy hellion, but he was a good kid at heart. What happened was, as my motivator, John was not behaving at home, and his parents were not tolerant because they're country folk and they're not educated very well.
Right, right.
So John was getting hit with a belt, which was common practice in those days. And I didn't know about until he told me later. And then he came in one day and he put his head down on the desk, which was highly unusual. I said, are you sick? What's going on? And he picked his head up and his eyes were bloodshot. And I said, what is the matter? Are you sick? He goes, no, I'm on medicine. I said, then you're sick? He goes, no, my mom put me on medicine. I said, what for? He goes, I don't know. I said, okay, but you don't look well. He goes, I'm fine. But his eyes were bloodshot and he was really like a different person. He wasn't the hellion funny kid that I knew. And I was worried. At that point, I found out that his mom had put him on a stimulant med. I think it was Ritalin at the time. Mm-hmm. And they visited the doctor. She told him he was a problem. And he said, oh, it's this. Let's go ahead and give him this. So they did. They never could get his dosage correct. So he was way out of it. Sleeping during the day, head up and staring into space. And I was brokenhearted. This I never thought I'd see. I never understood that this could be possible. I didn't need that kind of control with him. I mean, this is one of the key things you do as a teacher, if you're a good teacher. Learning is its own discipline, right? If you can reach the child or reach the adult when you're teaching, then there is no need for discipline. Learning becomes its own discipline. And that's a whole nother story, but that is incredibly important to learn. But I couldn't take it. So then I thought, I can help him. I will create a program that's going to help kids just like him. So I started funding it. I hired an engineer and a programmer, told him my concept, use this neurotechnology I found with a NASA, but we're going to embed these kind of skill sets in it. So that took me 10 years to do.
Good for you.
Yeah, that took a long time of research and development. And John went on, left my classroom, and I found out that he had been in and out of jail for a long time after he got through and started in high school. You know, typical trajectory, self-medicating at that point.
Oh, it just breaks my heart because I've seen my son's friends, people like that. And a lot of it sometimes just comes down to the parents not understanding. And sometimes I think with physicians, you have to be your child's advocate. Yes. They put my son on the stimulant. They put it with a relaxant and it made him a zombie. And, you know, it's you as the parent that has to say, look, this is not okay. And you know what I always say? It's okay to get a second opinion. Go to a different doctor, get that, because that breaks my heart. And the statistics are not great for kids that are like that, because if they're hyper and they're obnoxious and they don't know how to manage those emotions, they struggle. And so many, and it doesn't end after high school, right?
Exactly. It doesn't. And if they don't have the skills, medicine is not going to provide the skill set. We have to, as parents or teachers or coaches, help provide them with those skill sets, because medicine doesn't give any skill sets. And I think for a particular small set of children or adults, medicine can help you function. Mm-hmm. It really can. But you still have to have the skill sets that help us, because if I know that medicine will help me focus a little bit, it doesn't mean that my planning and organization are automatically going to just excel. They're not, because I don't learn that. That is a learned skill. So this is one of the things I found. But that was my huge motivation to transition out of education and into helping people with neurotech using play attention. And we have changed. I mean, you can look at just the letters that people send, because they're all over the website, the actual letters that people send in and the way that it's changed their life. We even had a woman who had Alzheimer's, who couldn't even find her way home after she went to the doctor's office. Mm-hmm. And she became, what is the word? She was not body locked, because her body would move, but she could not speak. And she couldn't get what was in her mind out. And eventually, when she was working with a play attention provider in her area, who just gave her exercise and play attention, she learned to speak again and could get what was in her mind out. And she wrote us a letter.
Wow. Saying, hey, was it Guillain-Barré?
I don't know.
Guillain-Barré is like, it's in the neurological sector where they're alive, but they can't speak. And it's, yeah. So that's amazing.
This, when she wrote that letter, I mean, we all teared up when we read it. We were like, oh my gosh, we did this for her. We helped her be able to communicate once again. Yeah. And this is, it is a fantastic thing. Even if we've been at this 30 years now, that is something that we all just appreciate hearing, because it's something that's real, that's changed the world just a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, perfect. I got another question for you. Now this is going to just be far right here for a second. So you went into business and it's going great and you're still developing, and believe me, check him out, because you will be amazed at what he's working on. But you're in business and your spouse works with you, right?
Yes.
Okay. So any new people that are wanting to start a business and they got their spouse and they're going to do it together, because I got one of those too. Any advice on that?
We're just the new business part or the spouse part?
The spouse part, working together.
You have to have an incredible relationship to do it.
Yeah.
Because if you're on walking on eggs now, eggshells, you know, you cannot, you won't manage to do it. We work shoulder to shoulder all day long, although she's in a different part of the office than I am. Yeah. We see each other for lunch, and then we have a rule that at the end of the day, right now, she just started this annual new evening practice.
I love this.
We will go out and to the back deck. We have a beautiful sunset. We're going out, and every evening we're going to watch sunsets together and just not talk about business. Matter of fact, we're not talking about anything. We're just going to sit and enjoy the sunset, and that kept our day. So it's a good way to just relax, de-stress, not talk about business anymore. And we have managed to stay together for a long, long time.
Right.
It's hard.
Does she have ADHD?
She does not.
Okay. So there's another dynamic of if one person has ADHD and the other person does not. And Melissa Orlov was on our podcast and we talked a lot about that. And that's myself and my husband as well. But I think a lot of it is you just kind of have to turn it off, like at the end of the day, and remember you're married and you got to go to dinner. You got to enjoy that time together and turn it off, and it'll be back there. It can wait, whatever it's big, unless it can't, but usually it can wait. So no, that's great. That's great. So you've got, what an amazing career you have. And you know, you've got the drive, and one thing I've learned about you too, is you have the drive that if you don't know the answer, you go find the answer, and you do that by research. And that's the best advice any of us could give to people that want to make changes. So, so one last question for you. Sure. If I brought three young adults that said, I don't have any idea what I want to do, because that's happening a lot, what advice would you give those three young adults?
I think one of the things you have to do if you're, you know, because you don't know, I did not know. I was so vague, and I'm going to be very honest with you. I was so vague as a youngster. When it came time to take standardized tests, I had no clue what those things were asking. I had no clue. I had no clue what was going on in life, oblivious to most things. And I was in a very different environment, but that's a totally different story. You can't decide it all of a sudden and it's going to appear. I think the statistics on young people getting a job that they want to stay with is around between 7 and 14 different jobs. And because there is so much that you can do. And I just want them to know one thing, is that there's so much information being poured on us all day long. You may think everybody knows everything. Everything that we need to know is already there. There is just so much we don't know.
Flat out. You and I learn every day.
Every day. You can learn something new every day, but follow what your heart really, really wants that's going to make you happy. If that's a garbage collector, do it. If it's a painter, do it. If it's a doctor, do it. But find out what really, really is in your heart and really what makes you feel that you're really contributing, that it's good for you. And when you find that, pursue it and do what you can. You know, it may not mean that you're going to make a lot of money. You may be a starving artist for a long time, but you'll do something that you love to do, you know, and find out. Find out if that's right for you. And remember that my brother used to call it a lily pond in the pond of life, a lily pad in the pond of life. So he was a percussionist. He was a timpanist with the Cleveland Orchestra, perhaps one of the best orchestras, if not the best orchestra in the world. And he actually played with Alabama Symphony Orchestra. He played at the Royal Swedish Orchestra. I mean, he went all over the world getting jobs, but he wanted Cleveland.
Yeah.
I think he went in three times for trials and he finally got it. And he just retired from Cleveland Orchestra. But he found something that he really wanted to do and that was really passionate. He was passionate about. And I think that's key. Then you can be happy. And but just be aware that you're not going to be Elon Musk. You're not going to make billions of dollars. You'll do well for yourself. You'll be happy. And that's the key to having a good life, is finding something that's going and someone that'll support you in that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a perfect example. I've been a search firm recruiter for 30 years and I still have it. And I love it. And I love placing CEOs. I love doing that. But boy, when I started Refocus and I was able to find out I had ADHD, my son had ADHD, and I was able to help other people every morning, I cannot wait. So what does that tell you?
Isn't it cool to get up and feel like that though? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an amazing change of life when you get into that and you're passionate about it and it shows.
Thank you. Thank you. So thank you so much for being on our podcast today. This has been terrific. And I know so many people are going to be touched by this. You're going to change people's lives. Just a note, if you did not catch Peter Freer on our Refocus podcast, go to refocuswithangela.com. You're going to get so much information. And we've actually asked Peter to come back and talk about Play Attention and how it works. So we'll have another episode on that. But Peter, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're a gem for having me. I really appreciate it. And I'm so excited just to be able to talk to you. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Sounds great.
Have you ever felt that you're traveling alone in a long and winding road without clear direction and guidance? ADHD, executive dysfunction, memory deficits, and impulsive behaviors pose even greater obstacles along that winding road. Play Attention provides clear direction, support, and guidance during your journey. It is based on neuroplasticity. Play Attention is a combination of NASA-inspired technology with executive function training, comprehensive neurotechnology training, and a nurturing support team. Play Attention has provided guidance and success across the globe for over 27 years. Join the Play Attention family and begin your journey to success. Together, we'll guide you to overcome your obstacles, harness the power of your mind, and change your challenges into superpowers.